Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Please be seated. This morning, the court has three causes on its oral submission docket. In the order of the presentation, they are Jose Luis Garza, doing business as Tropicana Nightclub versus the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission from Fort Bend County. The State of Texas versus Bristol Hotel Asset Company and others from Bexar County. And Carlisle King, individually and doing business as Tie Down Construction Company versus Dallas Fire Insurance Company from Harris County. In each of these matters, the court is allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. We are recording each of these arguments, and you may purchase a tape of any argument for a nominal fee from the clerk. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each argument and conclude the arguments by lunch. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Garza versus TABC.
May it please the court, Mr. Stephen Doggett will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. The 8th Court of Appeals has ruled that TABC Section 1167 requires not only that an appeal of a denial of a license be heard within 10 days, but that the judge also must render his decision within that same 10-day period. The court has also found that the judge in this case did not render his decision within the 10 days. If we accept the 8th Court of Appeals finding and its interpretation of the statute, it brings us squarely to the issue of whether or not the statute was constitutional as it applied to Mr. Garza in this case. Garza had pursued months of hearings in an effort to have his license renewed. He had timely filed all pleadings and had timely filed all post-hearing pleadings. Despite this, and for reasons completely out of his control, the TABC would have you interpret the statute to deny him all relief. We believe this is a violation of due process and a violation of due course of law under the Texas Constitution.
Did you also raise those arguments in the trial court?
Sir?
Did you raise those arguments in the trial court?
Yes, sir, we did. Okay. We also believe that this is a violation of the open courts provision of the Texas Constitution.
The Court of Appeals did not address any of these arguments in its opinion. Were they raised there?
They were raised there, and the Court of Appeals did not address them. One of the arguments that TABC makes as to why such a harsh interpretation of the statute does not violate the constitutional provision is because we are dealing with a license as opposed to which they say is a privilege rather than a right. However, there are numerous cases, and I've cited these in my brief, which hold that a licensee cannot be deprived of his license without due process.
Counselor, why didn't you, at the point that the trial court said he was not going to render his decision within the 10-day period, why didn't you at that point, like the state did, apprise the court that that was a necessary ruling he had to make within that time period? And if he continued to resist making a ruling within 10 days, why did you not seek mandamus at that point to require him to rule?
First, as to why we didn't tell the judge that, we didn't disagree with what TABC had told the court. We didn't say we thought they were wrong. We had no disagreement with their urging the court to rule within 10 days. As to why we didn't mandamus, it puts you in a tricky position. I don't know that mandamus would make any difference under TABC's position in this case. You can't mandamus before the 10 days is up. After the 10 days is up, under TABC's interpretation, you're dead.
Well, but the judge indicated to you that he really wasn't going to worry about the time period because he was in the middle of a lengthy trial, so that he would get to it when he could. So you, at that point in time, could have anticipated that he wasn't going to rule at that point.
Well, my recollection of what he said was, I'm in the middle of an 8-week jury trial. I don't know whether I'm going to be able to get to this in time. And so we didn't know what he was going to do. We hoped he would rule within the 10 days.
Well, he said he wasn't going to be confined by the 10-day rule, and we can find the exact language.
I don't dispute that.
Okay, so you were at least under notice that a ruling may occur after the 10-day period.
That's right. But I feel if we had sought a mandamus before the 10 days was up, an appellate court probably would have said we're premature, the 10 days is not up. And again, under the TABC's interpretation of the statute, if once the 10th day goes by, your appeal is dead, regardless of whether you saw mandamus. We feel that this interpretation of the rule, the case must be decided within 10 days, is an unfair restriction on a licensee's right of appeal. It almost renders the right of appeal meaningless. And you need to consider how this works. If you file, depending on the day of the week that you file your appeal, if you work with a calendar, you will have somewhere between 6 and 8 days, working days, to actually hear the appeal. And included in that 6 to 8 working days, you have to get notice to TABC of when the hearing is going to be, and I believe that under due process they're entitled to some reasonable length of time to be noticed of the hearing, and I would argue to be at least 3 days that they have notice. So your time is really compressed under this 10-day rule to just a few working days. Also, this statute does not take into account what the district court's prior schedule may be, and as in this case, he was engaged in a trial. So our position is it's just totally unreasonable to expect a district judge sometime between 6 to 8 working days, regardless of what he may already be engaged in, to have to hear the arguments in the case, review the record, and render a decision within the 10-day period. In this case, and I believe you have the record, the record was quite voluminous, and the judge would have had to read through that stuff, or arguably would have had to study it, and study the legal issues, and then render a decision within 10 days.
Do you think such a short deadline would always violate the Constitution, no matter what the subject matter was?
That would be our position, but at the very least...
So an abortion case or an election contest could not, though the legislature could not require this quick a ruling?
No, I think it's, in certain kinds of cases they could, but in this type
of case... So you have to distinguish your type of case from some other types of
cases. Yes, sir. And we would argue that even if you don't rule blanket that it's unconstitutional, it certainly was unconstitutional as applied to us in this case.
You mentioned that a couple times as applied. What is it that's the circumstance of your client that would make it unconstitutional as applied there without making it unconstitutional generally in all cases dealing with liquor licenses?
I think it's fact specific to our case that our client was always diligent and timely in everything that he had filed. The size of the record in our case, which was unusually large, I think, for a licensing proceeding, and the fact that the district judge was heavily engaged in a lengthy jury trial, I think those three things combined, and the fact that once we filed our appeal and had it heard, it was out of our hands. I mean, there's nothing else we could have done, we don't believe.
So it is the as applied is really the workload of The as-applied is if it's no fault to the litigant, that's what you mean by as-applied. If the litigant comes in and says, it's not my fault he didn't rule within the 10 days, then under those circumstances, if the rule's applied, it's unconstitutional.
Well, I think that's a fair reading, and certainly you could envision a scenario perhaps where you had a short record and you had a short argument, and the judge might not have had anything to do and just not ruled. Maybe you had a judge who just didn't want to rule. I don't think that's fair to the petitioner or the appellant, who has done everything he possibly can to have his case poured out under those circumstances.
Let me ask you, to interpret the statute for us, 1167b2, the case shall be, quote, tried before a judge within 10 days from the date it is filed. In your estimation, what does tried mean?
We do not agree with the Cook versus Spears interpretation that trial necessarily includes the rendition of a judgment. There are other cases that talk about that. When they talk about rendition of judgment, they talk about that being a separate step occurring after the trial. And certainly we would urge the court to interpret. We believe that it's open to interpretation that trial does not necessarily include rendition.
What's the point of the statute that only puts a 10-day limit on when you actually have to have the trial completed, but no limits on when rendition of judgment must occur? What's the point?
Well, what the point is that it would allow for the coverage of a situation like we have here, where you have a busy judge, you have a voluminous record, you have many issues, and the judge simply couldn't get to it in time. It doesn't cost a man like our client his license. I mean, he had run that business for years.
I'm just trying to help me think why the legislature would have said it's very, very important that you hear the evidence and have the evidence concluded and the quote trial concluded within 10 days, but we're not going to put any kind of time limit on when the judge has to render a judgment. Why can you offer some reason why they would make that distinction?
There are, I think, that there's a whole line of cases that consider the word shall. And in those cases, they talk about whether that's mandatory or directory. And in many of those cases, they have ruled, the ruling has been, that shall doesn't really mean shall in the sense that if you don't do it within the time limit, the litigation stops. And those cases have said that shall simply means, and there seems to be a split. There is a Lewis case, a Supreme Court case, which I cite in my brief, where it's an administrative hearing case where they rule that shall is not mandatory, it's merely directory. There's another line of cases dealing with forfeitures, driver's license suspension hearings, ALR hearings, that say shall is mandatory. But even though it's mandatory, it does not mean that the court loses jurisdiction if they don't act within the deadline. And I would say that this statute ought to fall within it ought to be interpreted the same as those cases. Shall means you ought to do it. It's either mandatory or directory. It's designed to encourage the prompt and speedy resolution of the cases.
So we're going to have to overrule our case law that interprets the statute to the contrary in order to rule for you on the statutory interpretation question.
To the extent that Cook versus Spears clearly holds, if it holds that trial includes rendition and it must be done within 10 days or the court loses jurisdiction, yes, we believe
that.
And
you agree the case says that?
Yes, I think it does say that.
Let me ask you, one other case cited by the other side is the Lawyers Lloyds case.
Yes, sir.
That says trial ordinarily, quote, trial includes every step taken in the determination of the issues between the parties and therefore includes the hearing on a motion for a new trial, which would be a post-judgment even step. Why? I mean, can you distinguish lawyer's lawyers from this case?
No, except that there's also some language in lawyer's lawyers that points out about, they use the word actual trial, and they distinguish that and say that the actual trial is the presentation of the evidence and the arguments leading up to the rendition of judgment. And our position would be that you could interpret trial in this statute simply to mean the presentation of the evidence and the arguments leading up to the rendition of the judgment.
What's the ratio to kind of effect of this ruling?
Sir,
as the ruling now stands, what's the race judicata effect? What remedies?
Well, my client,
if we were to not deny this writ, and there's a final judgment here, what remedy does your client have?
Well, my client's license is suspended and has been suspended.
I mean, it's gone now. How can you go about getting it back?
Well, the only thing he could do would be to apply for a new license.
And you have to show changed circumstances from what the circumstances were in the last trial? I'm just trying to understand, in terms of whether or not the 10-day rule might be constitutionally confirmed, the effects of that ruling surely would have to be taken into account. And
right.
So I'm just trying to understand from you how binding that is.
Well, all I can tell you is the practical effect in this case is that my client has lost his license and hadn't been able to operate as he was before he lost his license.
Let me ask a version of that. Mr. Garza had a license. He has not been granted a renewal of that license. Is he forever barred from ever getting a liquor license?
No, sir. I think he could.
When is the next time he could get a liquor license as a result of having not been granted the license this time?
I think you could apply any time.
And when you reapply, is the reapplication affected by the fact that there's been a determination that he was not allowed a license earlier?
My position, I think, yes. I think if he applied for the same license at the same location doing the same thing, I think basically there'd be an argument that was res judicata.
But lasts for how long? Forever?
Well, I don't know the answer. I guess at some point in time.
But don't we have to know something about that in order to decide whether or not there's a constitutional deprivation?
Well, our position would be is there's already been a constitutional deprivation. He's been out of business for well over a year, and you know, you got to go in business, and it's shut down. He's deprived.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear argument from Ms. Palmer.
May it please the court.
Before I begin my argument proper, I'd like to take a half second to explain my little device. This is a remote control for my hearing aid, so I may be fiddling with it to try to adjust the volume, so I beg the court's indulgence. I represent the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, and on their behalf today, we respectfully ask this court to do two things. The first thing we ask you to do is affirm the judgment of the 8th Court of Appeals in El Paso, dismissing plaintiff's appeal for want of jurisdiction, because they failed to secure a hearing, a trial, which includes both a hearing and the rendition of judgment
within
10 days.
Let me ask you about that. Isn't there something inherently unfair here? They did everything they were supposed to do. What would be wrong with going with the dissenting opinion in the Court of Appeals? What problems do you see with that?
I certainly don't disagree that it may well be unfair, but I believe that this is a statutory scheme that the legislature carefully crafted as long ago as 1935. That's the first time we really have the predecessor of Section 11.67.
But it seems that in crafting this requirement, that the concern was that the trial courts wouldn't hear and decide quickly enough. I would find it hard to believe that the legislature would try to cut off someone who did everything they were supposed to do, and the trial court just didn't do what they were supposed to do.
It certainly is problematic, but I think there are a number of practical answers to it. Number one, the plaintiff controls the timing of the case. Under the Alcoholic Beverage Code and the Administrative Procedures Act, they have 30 days after the rendition of a final agency order to file the petition. So the plaintiff controls the timing of the filing of the lawsuit. In any case, the plaintiff can approach the court administrator, knowing about the 10-day rule, to try to find that optimum window. When might the court be available? I've got a problem because I need to get this case heard within 10 days, or my client's right to judicial review may be lost. You could file it on the 10th day, the 20th day, or the 30th day, depending. The second thing that can be done is working with the judicial officials to either find a visiting judge to hear the case or work some arrangement out so that the case can be heard.
Okay, but what if you do all that and you're still right back where we are?
If you do all that, you're absolutely correct, Your Honor. The case, the court has lost jurisdiction to decide or is powerless to grant the relief sought.
Okay, so acknowledging the unfairness, what would be wrong with going with the dissenting opinions approach in this case?
I think the dissenting opinions approach would violate, and I guess the best way to say it is, I think there's a balancing act here between the public policy that I believe underlies the statutory section and the right of an individual, such as the respondent in this case, to exercise a privilege. It seems to me that in crafting this scheme and in putting in all the restrictions and the timelines and no trial by jury and judge alone and all the other things that are in there, the legislature, in the exercise of its wisdom, has carefully balanced the private rights of the private privilege of the individual to have a liquor license and run a bar with the need to protect the public health, safety, and welfare. And those are competing issues.
And why doesn't the dissenting opinions approach also balance those competing issues? When someone's done everything they're supposed to do, why can't we just say when the 10 days runs, you can then go get a mandamus to get the trial court to render a decision immediately?
If this court chose to do that, you certainly could. But I think in doing so, you would have to basically overrule the court's precedents in the 1975 cases of Cook v. Spears and Cook v. Walker.
Well, not necessarily. You could just say that the statute was directory, couldn't you? Couldn't we follow that line of cases
I think it's even stronger than that, Justice, because the statute also includes some words that I think are the most unusual words I've ever seen in a statute, which says, the legislature says, these provisions shall be construed literally. I would also point out that up until 1981, and this is continuously basically from 1937 to 1981, the statutory provision also included the phrase, these causes shall be advanced above or in front of all causes of a different nature. It indicates to me that in crafting this scheme, the legislature meant what it said and said what it meant.
Well, but it didn't say or what.
That is correct,
Your Honor. Shall or what.
It did not say that. At this
we court, said the or what, but they didn't. And they could just as well have meant the trial judge must try this case within 10 days or else mandamus or else
it's dismissed or you've lost jurisdiction.
Well, but you can't tell.
You cannot tell, and I don't disagree with that. You have to look, I think, to the totality of the statutory section, all the other provisions taken together. For example, and in the first instance, this court has provided the or what in 1975 in Cook v. Spears and Cook v. Walker. The or else is the trial court may not render any relief granted. The or else is that anything that occurs after that time is null and void.
In those cases, were the issues tried within the 10-day period?
They were not.
And in this case, were the issues tried within the 10-day period?
In this case, I'm glad you used the word tried, Justice Jefferson, because that's, I guess, the meat of the coconut, in essence. There was a hearing on the 10th day. There's no question about that. That occurred on January the 16th, I believe, 1998. The 10th day, I did not argue in the Court of Appeals that because the 10th day technically fell on Martin Luther King Day, that's out of the issue at all. So the real judgment had to be rendered by January 20th. And as you know from the record, what we have in this case is an order signed by the court on January the 28th. You know from the record in the Court of Appeals opinion that the attorneys representing the city of Rosenberg, which was the primary protestant and all of that. So The case was not tried within 10 days.
But the hearing was held within
10 days. The hearing was held within 10 days.
Let me ask you one question about this statute. And it, again, it's 1167B2. The case shall be tried before a judge within 10 days. The trial is, as lawyer's lawyer seems to indicate, everything that disposes of the case, including all post-judgment hearings. Let me ask you one question first. In these cases, would someone in the plaintiff's position be entitled to file a motion for new trial?
I believe in that, and that's why the answer is yes.
Okay, and then the rule says that these rules are, the rules are applicable to ordinary civil suits. Those apply. So in the ordinary case, after that motion is filed, they would have, there would be a period extending up to 105 days from the time of judgment before a decision would be made. So are you saying that the, you know, all of the 105 days that are ordinarily, that ordinarily apply in civil cases, and this particular type of case is condensed into a 10-day period. So you have to try it, you have to get the judgment, you have to file your motion, post-judgment motions, and have that determined all within a 10-day period.
No, is the short answer. The longer answer is what I proposed on page, the bottom of page 13 of our brief. I don't know why the court took this case or why four of you voted to take it, what particular issue caught your attention or fancy, but I can tell you this. There is a split, as I point out in my brief, between four of the courts of appeal around the state. The split is that the 1st and the 13th are joined together, the 4th and the 14th are joined together in terms of what happens after that 10-day period runs. In all four of the cases that I cite in my brief, Fox v. Medina, Macbeth v. Riverside Inn, Al Karah v. TABC, and TABC v. Top of the Strip, there was a hearing within 10 days, and there was a rendition of judgment within 10 days. Sometimes it was orally pronounced in court in the presence of the parties, as SMA Restaurant versus Leal tells us, means rendition. Sometimes it was simply a written order. The split comes in what can the court do afterward. I have suggested, not knowing again exactly what issue the court wants to grapple with, a clear or bright line test that will not only resolve the conflict between these four courts of appeal, but it will give finality and it will give uniformity of practice among every district court in the state and every court of appeals in the state that deals with these issues. And that is this. In appeals from commission orders, the trial court must try and render judgment in the case within 10 days of the filing of the suit. Failure to hold the hearing and render judgment within the statutory period renders the court powerless to take any action or grant the relief sought. This is important because I know this court is concerned about finality of judgments, and I've seen this in many of your prior opinions. What happens in this case, unlike many, say, general civil cases between private litigants, is there is finality because there is a commission order that will be affirmed by operation of law. It's exactly what happened in this case.
Let me probe your proposition here. You say if rendition doesn't occur within the 10 days, then it's over. But if rendition does, then all the rules of procedure, such as new trial, otherwise apply. And I don't understand why you're asking us to make that distinction. Well, if there's no rendition, why wouldn't you still have the opportunity to file a motion for new trial under the rules?
Because that's the split that's occurring between the four courts of appeal that have dealt with this issue of whether a motion for a new trial can be granted or even considered. In Macbeth, for example, the 14th Court of Appeals said, no, the court, under applying the Cook v. Spears and Cook v. Walker holdings of this court, said the trial court is powerless. Now,
well, that gets back to the Orquod, and help me here because I don't have the statutes in front of me, but in some cases where the legislature has said, yes, you've got a definite time period, such as the family code, you've got to hear it's in termination proceedings with 1 year. And doesn't it also say or dismiss them?
I believe that is correct. And certainly I concede and I wish the legislature had been a little bit clearer in its wording of this statute. The only thing I can tell this court is since 1937, this is the statute we've had virtually unchanged, except in 1981, as I mentioned, when they deleted the provision for reasons not apparent on the record, that these cases shall be advanced above all others.
May I ask a question? But, I'm sorry, Mr. Helmkamp. Are you still answering the question?
I was trying to complete that answer, but go ahead, sir.
Go ahead.
All right, just take half a second. The rest of the test, what we'd like to see, and the consideration is when the trial court renders judgment on or before the 10th day, yes, the rest of the rules applicable to ordinary civil trials apply, because that gives meaning and effect to the entire statutory provision. The commission's order is not, however, stayed. The commission, the judgment of the court, let's say as in this case, the trial court, having heard it, decides, no, the commission's order is supported by substantial evidence, and therefore I'm going to affirm it. That means the club has to shut down. It can still file a motion for a new trial because the statute tells us all of the rules applicable to ordinary civil trials apply with the following exceptions which shall be construed literally. If you look further into one of those sections, it also points out that the order, decision, or ruling of the commission may be suspended or modified by the court pending trial on the merits. That's that 10-day trial. But the final judgment of the district court may not be modified or suspended. So the legislature has also told us the normal procedure for supersedis on appeal and all of that, those kinds of things in the rules are not applicable. But the only way I can find to justify this statute and give meaning and effect to all of it and carry out the legislative intent, which is obviously to balance the protection of the public health, safety, and welfare on the one hand with the need of a permittee to carry out a personal privilege, is to suggest this test. I'm sorry, sir, I'm ready for your question.
Referring to Fox versus Medina, if that takes the position that as long as the judge orally states what the judgment will be within the 10 days, then at some point in the future the judge can
sign the order.
Now, the appeal under the rules of that decision doesn't occur until the written order. The oral rendition is no effect in terms of the appellate rights of the parties.
Correct.
I would assume that after about a year or two, if no judgment had been written, the trial court could be mandamus to enter the judgment that was orally rendered.
Correct.
We could try the case within 10 days, and the trial court refuses. Well, the trial court
for whatever reason
makes no oral rendition. What is the difference between, irrespective of what this statute says, which doesn't say anything about a judgment?
Right.
What difference is it between the party where the judge has refused, the trial's been had, the trial's been complete, the parties have rested, and the judge refuses to give you a written order, and a trial where the court has told you what the judgment will be orally, but refuses to give you a written order? What's the difference between those two people in terms of what happens in the process?
Well, I think what happens in the process, if I understand all of your question, is that there would have been under SNA Restaurant versus Leal a rendition of judgment. There would have been a pronouncement in open court in the presence of the parties of the court's judgment. That's what the commission would then take if we won the case. If the judge affirmed the commission's order, say, canceling or denying the renewal of the application, they don't have a permit, they're not in operation. If it was the other way and the judge ruled in favor of the plaintiff, we would issue them the license and they're operating. What the commission would have to do, depending again on the oral rendition of judgment, which is awaiting the ministerial act of the signing of the written order and the triggering of all of the other appellate timetables, is we'd have to file a petition for writ of mandamus to try to get the judge, give us a written order. We obviously can't tell you which way to rule, just rule.
If the judge, irrespective, the judge gives you no oral rendition, you've tried the case, there's no oral rendition, over a course of time, wouldn't the parties have the opportunity to bring a mandamus against the trial judge to give them a written judgment?
I say yes.
And so, as between the parties, they're in exactly the same posture. They don't have a written judgment. They can't proceed. You're saying that the way this statute is written, the party that got the judge to say, you lose, has a different set of procedural rights. I mean, well, they have a substantive difference between them. If they can just get the judge to say, you lose before 10 days are up, or you win before 10 days are up, then they've got this whole panoply of appellate rights to have this reviewed. But if they don't get the judge to say, you lose, or you win before the 10 days, then they don't get any of them right, that another person would get but couldn't exercise until they got the judge to put in writing.
That, I believe, is the intent of the legislature and the meaning and effect of the use of the term tried, meaning in the past tense. The legislature didn't say hold a hearing or conduct a hearing. As you've taught us in Cook v. Spears and Cook v. Walker, failure to hold that hearing, failure to conduct the trial, which I respectfully suggest, although the statute is inartful, includes not only the hearing itself, but the rendition of judgment as we have defined that term. Failure to do that deprives the court of the ability to grant the relief sought.
Mr. Homekamp, I'd like to ask you a question to follow up on the Chief Justice's question. First of all, do you agree that the open courts challenge has been preserved?
I need to answer your question this way. I did not participate in the trial court proceeding in any way in this case. I only took it over after the appeal had been filed in the 8th Court. It is my recollection, and I believe the record bears this out, that those issues were not preserved. They were raised for the first time when I raised the argument in the Court of Appeals questioning the jurisdiction. That's when the issue of open courts and all the rest came into being as we grappled with that issue, and certainly it became apparent before this court when they raised that in the petition.
What, was it briefed in the Court of Appeals, do you know?
I believe it was.
Okay. Let me follow up now on the Chief Justice's question. What happens if the applicant reapplies?
Let's say the applicant has an absolute opportunity to reapply.
And then what happens?
What will occur is they have to give notice of that application to virtually everyone in the community. The city of Rosenberg, who was the main protestant in the original license renewal, would have the opportunity to come in and re-protest the application. There would be another administrative contested case hearing that would be conducted before the county judge because this was a beer and wine permit.
And
if
would
they
the
asked
app-
for mixed beverage, it would go to SOA because of the way the statute
but
works.
Would the applicant be faced with the argument that this has been decided and res judicata and this
no.
never?
The applicant would the issue would be, based on the present situation, the county judge would look at what's called place or manner of operation. The city would have the opportunity to say, we believe that the place where this business is, they want to conduct their business would be detrimental to the public health, safety, welfare, morale.
Well, all right, let me rephrase my question. Would they have to show changed circumstances?
Not really showing changed circumstances, and the prior decision is not res judicata that would bar them forever.
Maybe not legally, but
not
practically,
legally.
I guess is my question.
Practically, if the city of Rosenberg or any other Protestant felt that either the manner in which they would operate their business based on their prior history or the place in which they would operate the permitted business reflecting on their prior history, would be detrimental, the county judge is authorized to deny the new request. But they get a full, fresh hearing, and all those issues are decided.
But likely they would have to show a change of circumstances.
They would probably have to show something that would justify the county judge in believing the place or manner in which they would currently operate would not be detrimental to the public health, safety, welfare, or morals.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
This statute is just unconstitutional and can't stand if you go by what Mr. Homekamp argues and what y'all have questioned. Practically, they're not going to get a license. This was a renewal of a license, and it was contested. It was tried for a long time in administrative. Judge Elliott granted the appeal, sent it back, remanded it. They filed a mandamus and tried to stop it. It didn't. We went back and heard another hearing for a long time and appealed it to Judge Culver, who denied the appeal, and that's how it got to the court in El Paso. So that's the way it got there. Now, my position and our position is that tried and trial are a whole lot different from in definition. That says that the trial will be held before the judge. Now, I can live with, in these cases, and anybody can live with, putting on the evidence in front of the judge because it's a statement of facts. It may be that big, but he's got it. Now, do we require
him? You mean because there would be no additional evidence?
There's no, it's, you know, by substantial evidence. So all we've got to do is introduce the statement of facts. That's no problem. That'll get you there. But are you going to say, in addition, okay, Judge, now you got to, you have to do that. I don't care what your schedule is. I don't care anything. You got to render. There's nothing that says render in these statutes. Cook doesn't say that. Cook talks about a trial.
Well, the commission takes the position, though, that what really matters is the rendition of judgment. And holding the hearing within the 10 days and only holding the hearing accomplishes nothing in terms of what the intent of the legislature was behind the statute. What's your response to that argument?
My response is I'm not sure that the legislature intended to put that burden upon a citizen who has a right to an appeal. They put tried before a judge.
What was the intent on the of the legislature when you look at the totality of the statutory scheme in imposing a very short time period, whatever action is required by the trial court, on the trial court?
Some 90 days passes before you get to that point.
Well, I understand, but,
and then,
what is the purpose, as you see it, of the legislature determining that there should be rather strict time requirements on a proceeding such as this?
Well, I think the only liberal thing that's practical would be that you put the evidence in within that 10 days. Cook and all these other cases.
I understand that that's what you say, but what I'm trying to understand is, from your perspective, as you look at this statute, what do you think the legislature was trying to accomplish by requiring a very strict time period, however you interpret it, to apply for this proceeding?
I believe that they wanted the evidence that, knowing that it's not evidence, it's not going to be, it's already been tried, there's a statement of fact, that after you file the appeal, that you offer this evidence. I don't think they intended to say, Judge, we don't care
what's
what you're
point,
doing.
What's the point of having to put on the evidence within 10 days if you don't also have to have a decision? What's accomplished by a 10-day period, a 10-day time restriction on putting on the evidence without requiring a decision?
Well, if that's what they intended, I think it's unconstitutional because you can't
do it. I don't think I'm stating it very clearly.
Well, as I
understand your position, you would have us interpret the statute so that tried in the statute means hold the hearing, put on the evidence within 10 days. Mm-hmm. That we would not interpret the statute to that time period to include the rendition of judgment.
Correct.
And my question to you is, what would be the purpose behind and what would be accomplished by requiring evidence to be put on within 10 days but not requiring rendition of judgment during the 10 days, if we were to agree with your interpretation?
I believe that is it, that the judge has it there to do. He has the evidence. I don't believe they intended that he had, and I don't know the Cook or anything else says rendition. They've even held, all the courts have held, hey, you can do the judgment. Remember, in this case,
don't you think that maybe it's to protect the person who has the license so the county judge can't sit on it indefinitely? Recently held that you can't renew it for a period beyond the renewal period.
Well, I think it hurts the ones that's appealing the Tropicana, because he has his license until the judge, if he loses jurisdiction in 10 days, his license is gone. That's it.
But assuming we were to hold that there's mandamus or you have a right of appeal, then it works to the benefit of the license holder.
If he had the right to appeal after the 10 days, well, certainly. Well, if the judge rules, or we can mandamus him, or they can mandamus him, I think that's a remedy. If you can, I certainly believe that. I believe my time's up.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument, and the first clause will be recessed.